woods and waters of the Great Lakes State to the Michigan Talk Network. It's Wild Michigan with your host, Duran Martinez.
Welcome to Wild Michigan. I'm Duran Martinez, all over the Great Lakes State, now in our 14th year on the Michigan Talk Network, being brought to you by Not Just Guns. Find them online, notjustguns.com. And do not forget that they have their Wednesday night auctions. Man, I tell you what, I drove by there yesterday, which was actually a Wednesday, and they were packed, getting ready. I mean, they are there like at 4 o'clock in the morning till the end of auction time, and then they're back there early the next morning to get you your gun that you purchased and make sure everything is in order the way that you like it. Notjustguns.com, North Cedar Street at 127 in Mason is where you can find Mike Green and the gang over there. Also by Conquest Sense, ConquestSense.com, makers of VS1 and Evercom. Some great friends, Doug and Karen Roberts, joining us here as well. But we're going to go to our longtime friend, bring this gentleman in first and foremost, Bill Parker joining us. And Bill, you've been with us since the very beginning as well. And this on the 30th, we entered our 14th year of Wild Michigan. And I can't believe it, man. And you've been here. This has been a long run. And we've seen a lot of changes. You've seen a lot of changes over that amount of time as well.
Yeah, congratulations, Duran.
Thank you, sir.
Fantastic. 14 years is nothing to shake a stick at. That's fantastic, and glad you're out spreading the word for us.
Well, you know, we do what we can, and believe me, it's always been about the guests on the show and about the information you guys bring to us. And Michigan Outdoor News, you've been, the editor of that for quite some time, as long at least as we have known you. And, front page of an earlier September issue, our good friend Richard P. Smith reports that a wolf was shot in self-defense. And this is the first time that I'm hearing of a case like this. I'm sure it's probably happened that self-defense has been claimed, but this is the first one that I've seen make a headline.
Yeah, it is kind of a surprise. You're right. I haven't heard of anything like this happening in the past either. I know there were wolves shot that have been claimed self-defense, but when they go and investigate it, they find out that the wolf was actually running away or broadside or something like that when it was shot. But this one was totally different. The wolf attacked the fellow's dog and actually took it right out of his yard, and he went out and fired a shot over the top of them to try to get the wolf to stop to drop the dog, and it did. And it turned and saw the guy there standing there, and it charged him.
So wow.
He shot it as the wolf was, headed towards him, coming at him, and he shot it in self-defense. And they did go out and investigate and found out that it truly was a self-defense incident. And that is the only time under the current law that you can lethally kill a wolf. So he was not charged and has been exonerated of any kind of legal matters in the case. But yeah, quite a scary thing, and apparently his dog's going to be okay, so that's good. And he wasn't hurt at all, so that's good too.
It is, and that is such a rough area. I mean, look, a lot of people do not like what has been going on with the wolf issue here. I mean, they're off protected, they're off endangered. Then all of a sudden, somebody like Dana Nessel comes in and makes a big to do of this whole thing. And and we understand, and I get people have their own method, their own way of wanting to deal with these animals, especially up in the UP. But you better be prepared to face the consequences, and you better be prepared to prove that it was a self-defense issue.
Yes, absolutely, and it's a federal thing; it's not a state thing.
Sure.
So people have to understand that too. That when you think you're doing something like that and you decide to step on the other side of the law, you're breaking a federal law now.
Yeah, it's again the 3S method doesn't really qualify.
Right,
and I'm not gonna explain it, because everybody that knows what the 3S method is, you're probably chuckling to yourself right now. But again, this is something federal you're messing with.
Right.
So by all means, man, just make sure it's an absolute necessity if you have to go into a situation like that. Now,
you know, and you hit the nail on the head, Duran, too, when you said that, you know, first they're unlisted and then they're not unlisted. And all of these issues don't have anything to do with if the wolf is recovered. It all has to do with dotted I's and crossed T's and the language of the, you know, the legislation or whatever that they use to overturn this. It's been judges. It hasn't been biologists that are bringing this back. It's a judge that says you did this wrong or you did that wrong. So that's what's really unfortunate is that, you know, it's all legal or political. It has nothing to do with the recovery of the species. And that's really, if you ask me, that's a slap in the face to the Endangered Species Act because it worked.
Right.
You know, it worked. Wolves, we've got more wolves now than anybody can ever remember. And, you know, we've exceeded our goal tenfold as far as time goes. Our goal was 200, you know, a viable population of 200 breeding wolves. And we've had 600 wolves for the last 5 years and over 200 for the last 10 or 15 years almost. So, you know, mission accomplished, but the courts and the legislators don't want us to get back to managing them. And it's, you know, it's just a shame and it's a mess. And hopefully somewhere down the line real soon we'll get that all turned around and they'll come back into state management and we'll be able to at least, you know, resolve issues when there's conflicts and there's problems without going out there with poppers and waving your hands at them.
Well, yeah, that's just it, too. And on the opposite end of the spectrum, I want to go back to 2006 when we had Proposal 3 on the ballot, which would have allowed Michigan to hunt the most abundant game bird in the world, the mourning dove.
Mm-hmm.
And how that was, it was presented so bad, and yet big cities that know nothing, you know, and I'm not saying everyone in the big city knows nothing. I'm saying the population got to play the part on this. And again, biology and conservation and everything else was thrown out the window.
Yeah, it's a sad state right now in situations like that. Doves, yep, and wolves are both taking a big hit because of it.
Right, exactly. It's not like those doves were going to stop at the Michigan border going, oh, can't go to Indiana. You know,
right.
They're going to shoot at me or Ohio. You know, we can't have that happening, but yet we're still teased every time we look at a box of shot from Remington and see that mourning dove.
It's got the dove on it.
It does. It does. It's the shot of peace, Bill.
That's right.
That's what Remington, the shot of peace, because it has a dove on it. Yeah. No. I promised myself I wouldn't get started, and I just got myself started. But
we got you wound up already.
We did.
First thing,
we did.
Grant.
Right. Right. Well, that's okay though, because you know what? It's a long, boring show. If somebody's not wound up on this show, and normally we find somebody a little bit later on, we're going to have Lance Valentine on to talk about Lake Erie walleye fishing. It doesn't take that much to get that guy cranked up either.
Oh, no, and I'll bet he's excited because now's a really fun time down there. I know he has his big outing down in Ohio, and they just get some monster fish down there in the fall. It's crazy.
You know, and we've been talking, and I've talked about this for the past couple of weeks. When we first started doing this show, we were like cresting on this 10-year wave of walleye, you know, like, you know, the cyclical numbers. And we were at this peak of this 10-year wave of how these were going to be the good old days. Well, it's 14 years later, and this is like the tsunami.
Yeah, and it doesn't look like anything's going to change in the near future. We've had that phenomenal 2015-year class that's kind of carrying us now. And last year, I spoke with Jim Francis, the basin coordinator, and he said that last year's year class was even bigger than the 2015-year class. It's the biggest they've ever seen. So just about the time that the 215 class starts to peter out a little bit, these 218 fish are going to come in, and it's going to just maintain itself for who knows how long. These are the good old days of walleye fishing in Lake Erie, that's for sure, because it's been nothing short of phenomenal.
Absolutely, and I'm gonna give Dan Kim a little credit for that saying as well, because we talked with him from Great Lakes Bass last week about fall bass fishing, and this is definitely the time to get out. We're speaking with Bill Parker from Michigan Outdoor News. We're going to speak more with Bill in a couple minutes about the new pheasant hunting initiative going on here in Wild Michigan. Thank you.
You can join us on Facebook or listen to podcasts, all from our website at wildmichiganradio.com. Now, back to Duran Martinez and Wild Michigan.
Hey, up in the backwoods, down in the holler. Old boy's feeling like a dog on a collar. Keeping that chain pulled tight. Waiting on Saturday night.
Welcome back to Wild Michigan. I'm Duran Martinez, being brought to you by Conquest Scents. Check out their new line of products, like their new Scrape Maker. Perfect for making your own scrapes, and you can make your mock scrapes. And Tom Nelson, man, I spoke with him last week, or was it the week before? Anyway, we talked to Tom Nelson here recently about the Scrape Maker, and definitely a tool in his backpack. He is the host of the American Archer, and it's definitely one in ours as well. Find all the information at conquestscents.com. And don't forget, not just guns helping us out as well. Back to Bill Parker, Michigan Outdoor News. And Bill, the other night, my lovely wife, Sarah Marie, and I were out to dinner, and this gentleman comes up to the table and says, "You're not from around here, are you?" Well, by goodness gracious, it was Al Stewart, the Upland Game Bird specialist for the Michigan DNR, longtime friend of the show, and a world-renowned. This is no joke that we are so blessed to have all these people, especially in the Lansing area, a world-renowned Upland Game Bird specialist, the only guy I know to have caught and released a world slam of wild turkeys, and has been very, very big on this pheasant restoration project.
Yeah, Al's a great guy and a good friend, and you're right, the restoration project that's coming up, I'm as excited about anybody as that. And for people who don't know, the legislature actually appropriated $250,000 for a pheasant release program in Michigan, and that's unheard of. That's never happened before.
Sure.
That
no.
They would appropriate money to release birds. So that was fantastic. They did that last year, and half of the money is going to be used this year, half will be used next year. So we're good for the next 2 years, and we'll see what happens after that. But the state is working with the Game Bird Breeders Association, and the state isn't going to be doing any of the planting. The game bird breeders are going to be doing all the planting and all the stocking, and they're going to stock only roosters at 11 different state game areas across southern Michigan. And they're not going just to any of them. They looked at the habitat, and they found ones that have the best, you know, possible habitats, some grasslands and some good strong fence rows and cover for these birds. And they'll be releasing birds every week at all the 11 game areas. So there won't be like a ton of birds out there the first week, and then they're all gone for the rest of the season.
Right.
They're going to spread them out and release a few here and a few there. They're going to be releasing them during non-hunting hours, which is good because you can't have those clowns out following the trucks around like they used to do with the old put-and-take hunting. And it'll give the birds a little bit of time to acclimate where they are and what's going on before the sun comes up. So it should be fun. You know, it's creating a lot of opportunities. Hopefully we'll introduce some new people maybe to the sport. It's going to be something that we haven't had in a long time, and it's going to be a lot different than the old put-and-take hunts that we used to have. The birds that you get at game ranches now are hard flying, and heck, half of the roosters run just like wild birds do now. You need posters at the end of the field to post them up before they run into the next field. So I'm looking forward to it. It should be a good time.
Now, speaking with Bill Parker from Michigan Outdoor News, Bill, I was a kid when put and take was enacted and was used. And it was really a debacle because you would get out there, they would be out there ahead of you, they would dump the birds off the truck, you could literally follow the tracks in the grass where these trucks have gone, and that was it. It was a slaughter.
Yeah, and the birds weren't real, hell, I don't want to say healthy, but they just weren't real good birds. They, you know, half the time you couldn't get them to flush, and when you did, they'd fly 50 yards or 20 yards even and plop back down in the field. And it was better than nothing, but it certainly wasn't really conducive to what pheasant hunting is all about. And we're hoping that this is going to be a lot more realistic and a lot better opportunity and a better experience for people, especially those who've never had the opportunity to experience it before. Boy, when you get a dog that goes on point and that rooster flushes and he cackles and flies up into the sky, and I'll tell you, makes the hair stand up on the back of your neck.
I tell you what,
it's just a lot of fun.
It is for those who have not been to a good pheasant hunting preserve, we go to Bear Creek down just south of Addison, down there, and you know our good friends Ross and those guys over there, they do such a wonderful job. And these birds, I mean, these dogs work. These birds, they go in on point, and you know, whether it's Rob's dogs, Russ's dogs, or my friend Mike Shippa's dogs, whatever, these dogs are working hard, and those birds are flying fast. They're running hard. And this is nothing like you would think it is at a preserve. It is like good old, you know, fashioned pheasant hunting. And believe me, you miss sometimes. This is not that easy.
Oh yeah, it's humbling. Those big birds get up right in front of you, and you think, oh, I got them.
Yeah.
And a shot or two later, he's still flying.
You know,
how did I miss that?
It's true. It's not as much, I would say it's not as much work as South Dakota, because the expanse out there is so great. But
sure,
some of these places are leasing properties or have some property down there. You know, and there's not a lot of these pheasant preserves. There's a few out there, and there's a couple more that I know of that we'll be talking about before too long. But it's just incredible, and to see the dogs work and to have those birds fly up on you, you know. And I remember the very first time I went to one on Harson's Island, the hen went up, and I said, no, I can't shoot. And they're like, you can shoot. So, you know, I took my shot and she dropped it, but it was a weird feeling that way. But you know, they have quail, they have chukar and other things too that that you normally, you know, we don't normally get a good chance to hunt.
Right. Now, that's one thing that hunters do need to be aware of, that these stocked birds, the rules have not changed. It's still roosters only, and it's
right,
still a two-bird-per-day limit. You know, it's not a hunting preserve like we're used to, so if a hen gets up, you can't shoot them. Some people have got a little mixed up on that and thought that they were going to be stocking pheasants and or roosters and hens, and that everything was going to be open, but that's not the case at all. It's same regulations apply as have always applied for pheasant hunting, and that's roosters only and a two-bird limit per hunter.
Yeah, and that's coming up on the 20th, and thanks again to Al Stewart, and thanks again to our government for dipping into the general fund to actually let that happen.
That was just, a lot of people went, what? They did what?
You know, maybe if
so
we had a governor.
It was fantastic, and you know, I have to call out Ken Dalton on this too, because Ken is the president, or he calls himself the pheasant, of the Michigan Pheasant Hunting Initiative, and he really got this ball started about 3 years ago. He started a one-man campaign, let's stock some pheasants and you know, kind of bring the hunt back if we can and see what we can do. He got some legislators on board, MUCC came on board, and the ball just started rolling, and it's been nothing but good news ever since. So I have to give a shout out to Ken, because without his persistence and his initial, you know, vision and thought of let's do something, we probably wouldn't have this today. So looking forward to it, and it should be a lot of fun. One of the other cool things, they're going to have two recruitment and retention hunts, two special hunts, one at Allegan State Game Area and one at the Shiawassee State Game Area, that are geared specifically for people who have never hunted before, never hunted pheasants before, or maybe haven't hunted them in 20 years or 25 years and want to kind of come back and see what it's all about.
All right.
And those will be two cool hunts. The Allegan one is on November 2nd, and the one at Shiawassee is on December 14th. So those will be a lot of fun.
All right, Bill Parker, Michigan Outdoor News, appreciate you joining us. And if we only had a governor that would fix the damn pheasants, I'd be happy. It's Wild Michigan, being brought to you by Not Just Guns.
To everyone that has served this great country, keeping us free to enjoy the great outdoors, thank you. From Duran Martinez and Team Wild Michigan.
I'm just trying to be a father, raise a daughter and a son, be a lover to their mother, everything to everyone. Up and at 'em bright and early, I'm all business in my suit.
Welcome back to Wild Michigan. I'm Duran Martinez. Thanks to Bill Parker from Michigan Outdoor News for joining us in the first segment of the show. Thanks also to Not Just Guns in Mason, Michigan. You want to get that new deer rifle, that new Ruger Bushmaster, whatever, the 450. Make sure you check them out, man. Check out all of their fine selections, along with ammunition, accessories, even suppressors, handguns, all kinds of great stuff. NotJustGuns.com. Cedar Street at 127 in Mason, and you can find them online 24/7, NotJustGuns.com. Joining me right now, our good friend from Teaching Fishing, Lance Valentine, joining us on the show. And Lance, as I was telling Bill Parker earlier in the show, I mean, this is like the part two of our 14th year, which you were at our first anniversary when we did the broadcast live from the parking lot. I mean, it was big time back then.
That was big time back then. I mean, that was God, it doesn't seem like it's been 14 years ago. So
I know.
I'm not much old. I'm not 14 years older than I was then. So I don't know what's happening here.
I'm a little more gray. That's about it. That's all I got. My daughter. This is what's so funny. My daughter was six when we started the show. She's now 20. She's working in Davison, doing political stuff for our side of the things, and she's doing well, man. I'm very, very proud of her, and you know, she's working hard and making a name for herself, which is fantastic.
Nice. So she's in my neck of the woods then.
Yeah, absolutely. And you know, you've been with us this whole time, and a lot of things have changed. Even fishing has changed. You know, you've learned a lot of things. You've shared a lot of different things, and which you always do, that you have learned over the course of the years. You've changed boats. You've changed habits and lure types and all this other things. Is it wrong to say that fish don't change? I mean, they're going to be at that waypoint.
It's definitely wrong to say fish don't change. Fish are in a constant state of change. You know, what they eat, how they act, how big a schools they're in, how their movements change a little bit. The biggest thing that we have to deal with as anglers, we don't see it as much. And you know, it's funny. I know a lot of your listeners are more hunters than they are anglers, but you know, deer movements have changed over the last couple of years. You know, population changes have kind of pushed deer to act different. And we can see that, but people don't think about fish that way because they really can't see what fish are doing. But you want to talk about, you know, one of the biggest changes we've had here in our part of the world specifically. We've had one big environmental change, and the water clarity has changed completely different from 15 years ago to now. And go back 25 years, it's completely different. So we've got this water clarity thing, but we deal with it on a yearly basis. We deal with differences in prey populations, right? What kind of prey is available? When is it available? How much of it is available? The balance of game fish, you know, how many perch, walleye, muskies, whatever is in your lake. You know, as those start to fluctuate, the amount of food that's needed for one species may dictate that another species needs to move to a different source of food because there's not enough of the other species to compete with the massive amount of more apex species. For bait, that all affects fishing, and we just want to go to the same spot we went to with our grandpa 25 years ago. And go, holy crap, the fish aren't biting. Well, and that's not true. They're not biting right here, doing the same thing they've been doing for 20 years. But they're somewhere biting, and you know, all the studies we have tell us that populations of walleye and perch on most of the Great Lakes are as good, if not better, than they ever have been. We just don't take the time as anglers to adapt to what Mother Nature is throwing at us, and sometimes that hurts us in the amount of fish that we catch, and unfortunately that becomes how much we enjoy it, how much we go. But paying attention to what's happening with the bait fish, and not just bait fish, but bait availability. Maybe it's invertebrates, maybe there's bug hatches, maybe there's a lot of freshwater shrimp this year, maybe there's a lot of spiny water fleas, whatever the case may be. Those things are all triggers to location and feeding differences that we need to adapt to as anglers, and sometimes we forget about that stuff.
Lance Valentine is our guest here on Wild Michigan. Lance, you know, we kind of talked about this off air a little bit, that sometimes anglers will throw their hands up going, well, you know what, here are my waypoints, and the fish were biting there like last week or last year or whatever the case, and they're just not there now. The fish just must be gone.
Yeah, and that, you know, I hope Parker's listening, because now, you know, it's just it's frustrating for me as someone who tries to, you know, educate, right? We devoted the last 20 years of our life to helping people catch more fish, and one of the things we talk about when we start talking about the foundations of becoming a good angler, we talk about understanding bait, because top-end predators, right, big bluegills, big crappies, walleyes, perch, muskies, smallmouth bass, largemouth bass, doesn't matter. They are driven, other than 3 or 4 weeks during the springtime where their focus is on spawn, once they get to the point where they are no longer worried about being eaten because they're at a size of their species that says they are at the top, their whole life, other than those 3 or 4 weeks around spawn, their whole life revolves around, where's my next meal? Mm-hmm. And they are not going to swim 6 miles to eat and then swim 6 miles back to hang out. They're not going to live in 40 feet of water and swim up to 8 feet to eat and go back to 40. That's not what they do. They live close to what their where their food source is. And what's happening is guys are not paying attention to how the food source is changing, how that is going to dictate where fish are located, and how and what they bite on. Great example. Lake Erie perch fishery in Western Basin, right? So there's lots of arguments about what's happening. Guys just aren't catching perch like they used to. I get all that, right? But when you talk to the guys who are in charge of the science, they tell you the numbers are there, and they've actually done some tracking studies on the perch. They're in different places. Mm-hmm. They're not on some of these hard-bottom spots that they traditionally are on this time of year. They're on soft-bottom spots. Their diet has changed from a shiner-based diet to an invertebrate diet. So they're eating crayfish. They're eating spiny water fleas. They're eating more. Mayflies. They're eating more dragonfly nymphs. They're eating more bugs than they are minnows. Well, you're not going to go with a coat hanger size perch spreader with a number 2 Aberdeen hook and a 3-inch shiner minnow and catch a perch that's feeding on, you know, mayfly wigglers. It's not going to happen because it doesn't look right to them. So we have to sometimes as anglers go a little bit deeper into the science, understand what the fish are actually eating on, and make sure that we have something that at least closely represents what those fish are doing, and put this in a location where those fish are going to be so they can take advantage of that food source, not just where they were last year, because things could be completely different this year.
Lance Valentine's our guest here, and I knew the conversation Bill Parker and I had, it would happen. We would get you going. And I got to commend you. I got to commend you on keeping it cool through that whole thing.
Well, you know, it's
because you are truly one of the most passionate people I know about, not only, you know, the angling as a sport, but as an educational tool, and that is admirable as the day is long.
Well, it's frustrating to me the thousands and thousands and thousands of people I talk to that tell me, what do I got to do to get better? What do I have to do to get better? What do I have to do to get better? So you start telling them, study bait fish. Start paying attention to the weather and the water conditions 4 or 5 days before your trip. Start keeping good records so you can go back and look at what worked and what didn't work under the same conditions. Start doing all, and they're like, okay. Hey, what's your favorite color? Right? And you're like, do you not just listen to what I told you? People want this. We were just talking about this on our Teaching Fishing live pro chat on Facebook Tuesday. We were just talking about this. I saw Kevin Van Dam a couple years ago doing a seminar on the tank at Lake Ultimate in Novi. And he's casting this shallow diving crankbait, right? And he's talking about how he won a tournament down south in this water. He was fishing about 3.5-4 feet of water, completely covered with stumps. And he says the visibility in that water was about, you know, 3/4 of an inch. Mm-hmm. And he's casting this crankbait. I guarantee you 500 people went and bought that crankbait, and they're casting it in 20 feet of water in Lake St. Clair where you can see the bottom in 8 feet of water and going, well, Kevin lied to me. This crankbait doesn't work. Because they wanted to grab this piece of tackle that they thought would make a difference. They didn't take where that tackle worked. They didn't take the context of where that stuff actually worked. That's where I get frustrated. People don't pay attention to what's important. They worry too much about trying to get a fast answer to become better anglers.
All right, Lance Valentine joining us here on Wild Michigan.
Thank you. You can send your suggestions, comments, or questions to us here via email at outdoormailbag@gmail.com. Now, back to Wild Michigan.
Turn the quiet up. Turn the noise down. Let this old world just spin around.
Welcome back to Wild Michigan. I'm Duran Martinez. I'm laughing. Thanks to Conquest Sense and thanks to Not Just Guns for being a part of the show, man. Thank you guys. Really, really help us out a great deal. We appreciate it. Lance Valentine has helped us out for many, many years as well. TeachinFishing.com. And there's a link on our website at WildMichiganRadio.com. And Lance, I had to laugh because every time you say, you know, somebody comes up to you, what's your favorite color? I go back to 1984 and the color Selector. Do you remember that?
Dr. Hill.
Yep. Oh, my gravy. If you don't know what the color Selector is, and maybe you're a bass angler and you want to know the right color to use at any given time in any depth and clarity of water, you take this unit, you throw it down the you throw the one end down into the water, and it'll tell you what color you should be using. Somebody made a bet.
That was actually based on pretty good science. So basically what this guy did is he painted a bunch of crawfish different colors, and the probe on the color selector actually measured how much light was in the water at a certain depth. And then through his experiments over the years, he used painted crayfish under certain light conditions that he could measure and repeat, and he found out that, okay, under this amount of light, fish have a tendency to eat this color crawfish. So the actual science behind it was not bad. I just don't know if you need to take that kind of time to figure out exactly what the fish can see. So I don't know. Do you remember the tackle boxes that had they have 30 spots in them, and each one have a different color? So you buy. I mean, I remember Cotton Cordell was one of the big ones with crankbaits. They made crankbaits in all the colors for the color selector, and they sell them in one box. And you'd put each little compartment of the box would be for a certain color. So when you had that color in your color selector, you knew what lure to grab. So, yeah.
Mm-hmm. Oh, yeah. So look it up. Color Selector. Just like that. And then take a little trip back to 1984, and you'll know exactly what we're laughing at. And, boy, some of those things made a big, big impact. And I'm not going to go into all of them because that's a whole nother show. That people have made a lot of money on that I'm not getting anything for talking about. So,
right, exactly.
But we do want to teach people about fishing, and right now October is the month for Lake Erie. It's like the whole month you can just go Lake Erie walleye. And what is it about this magical month and the fishing on Lake Erie? I mean, this weather, it looks pretty perfect for it today. And big walleye.
Yeah, well, we're starting this transition. When water temperatures get in the mid 60s, 65 is kind of when I start seeing consistent 65 degree temperatures, I get pretty excited because that's kind of that trigger from, we're done with summer, we're into fall, and Mother Nature starts to send some signals to fish, and particularly walleye, but most spring spawning fish start to get the same signal in fall, and that is, hey, you got to get fat because what's coming up is going to be tough. You got to get through winter. You've got to get through pre-spawn. You got to get through spawn. And remember, this time of year, every time a bait fish gets eaten, it's not getting replaced. Our last bait fish hatch was probably middle of June. So every time a bait fish gets eaten right now, there's not any more coming. So fish are getting hungry. There's a cue that says you need to eat as much as you can. Bait fish are getting less and less available, so there's not as much bait. Fish are starting to get into preferred areas, so you're starting to see more fish in smaller spots. So that creates not just the I need to eat because I need to eat, it also creates some competition among the fish. This is a pretty good time to get your hooks into not only a lot of fish, but a lot of big fish, and not only a lot of big fish, but maybe the fish of a lifetime because the cues are all there. Fish are getting dumber right now because their whole system, their whole cue right now is to eat, 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 eat. I can't tell you how many 7, 8, 9, 10, 11-pound walleye I've caught that have, 4 pounds of bait in their belly, and they still hit a crankbait. And I mean bait you can identify. It was probably alive, 10 minutes ago. They're just on this put-the-feed-bag thing on, and when they get in very, very specific areas, which are very pretty easy to kind of pattern on where they're going to be in general areas. And then, you know, they're easy to find with your sonar because they're usually up off the bottom. They're usually aggressive. They're usually in smaller schools. You just got to stay on top of them, and you can usually put together a pretty good day this time of year. And remember, it only gets better as we go. You know, 55 degrees is my next trigger. That's when you want to be on the water. When you start seeing the 55 degree stuff, you know, I tell guys, you know, calling dead to work, right? You ain't coming until you're back to life. That 55 degree down to 52, 53, 51, that is kind of the trigger of walleye fishing. And I would tell you, if you're a serious trophy hunter for walleye fishing, once you get to 55, you need to be on the water until you cannot put your boat in the water anymore because of ice, because that's when your chances for big, big, big fish go way, way, way up.
Yeah, it's you know, it's one of those magical fisheries. Again, this is something you got to watch because, like you said, with those bait fish not being replenished and everything else, things are going to change. Again, here's that thing. You have to watch for that change and adapt.
And, you know, and it's funny. It happens in every lake. Every body of water, it happens. And Lake Erie just happens to have 65 gazillion fish in it. And because of the way Lake Erie is, you know, access to the Detroit River and other spawning rivers on the south and north shore, you've got shallow, fertile, warmer rearing grounds on the western end of the lake, you know, on the Michigan side of the lake, and then you get into Ohio where you've got enough room to have open water bait fish around the islands, and then you go further east, and these fish can travel, stay in cold water, which helps them continue to grow over the summer. They can chase high-protein bait fish like smelt. Then they work their way back. You know, so you've got everything that you need in Lake Erie, and not just everything you need to grow a big walleye, but you have it on a big scale, right? You have a big body of water. You have lots of deep water. You have everything on a grand scale. So everything is just bigger and better
right
on Lake Erie. But what we're talking about happens. I don't care if you're up in Grayling and maybe you're fishing Lake Marguerite or, you know, maybe up at Burt Lake or Mullet Lake or maybe, you know, some of the down south lakes in Michigan that have planted walleyes. I don't care if you're in Bull Shoals, Arkansas. The trigger to fall happens everywhere, and the movements are pretty predictable and pretty much the same no matter where you go, and the chance to catch a big fish is the best this time of year.
Now, you've had the trophy hunts time and, you know, years and years and years. Are you doing that again this year?
Absolutely, yeah. First weekend of November is our traditional, we call them fishing education weekends now, but it started as what we call the trophy hunt. It was kind of an extension of our seminars. It was kind of an on-the-water way for exam for guys to kind of, if they spent some time at our seminars, to kind of apply what they learned. We started that back in 2003. This is actually October 31st to November 3rd is this year's trip. It's always the first weekend of November. This is actually our 57th trip we've done since 2003. Now, they haven't all been to Lake Erie, but the one traditional trip, the one trip that's been a constant since we started in 2003 has been the Lake Erie fall trip first week in November. So, yeah, we've got that going on. You know, it's on the website, teachingfishing.com. Guys can click on the campus map and find the Fishing Education Weekend. All the information's there. We still have some openings. We get about 100 anglers to that, you know, sharing information, seminars every night, seminars after dinner. A morning fishing meeting, lots of workshops on electronics and tackle and rigging your boat. Fishing time, we're sharing information on the water. It's a great way to come and not only catch fish, but also take the time to learn and have a four-day weekend where you can actually learn something in the classroom, go on the water, apply it, come back, ask questions, learn something else, go back out and apply it, and definitely leave there a better angler.
Now, as always, man, it sounds like a good time. Teachingfishing.com is where you go to find Lance Valentine. And, of course, the link on our website, wildmichiganradio.com, where you can pick up this podcast and everything else. Anything else? We got about a minute left in this segment before we have to say goodbye to this hour. Boy, we covered a lot, man.
I'm going to tell you to encourage all your listeners to go hunting and not go fishing, because that way there's not as many people on the water. So,
well, bow season is open now. The first day was 30 degrees. The second day was kind of wet and cool. The third day kind of wet and cool. I guarantee we're going to have a really good harvest of white-tailed deer this year. Been talking to our experts, and looks like the antler growth is going to be fantastic. according to Doug Roberts, the summer we've had, albeit short. I mean, the spring we didn't have, which, you know, all my trail cams were underwater. I got more pictures of bass than I did of any deer. But I think we're still going to have a good crop of big bucks this year, as we have in Michigan. And whatever it is, it's a trophy to you. And Lance Valentine, we appreciate you joining us here on Wild Michigan.
All right, buddy. Anytime. Thanks for having me.
Absolutely. More coming your way. Thanks again to our friends at NotJustGuns.com, located in Mason. And, of course, Conquest Sense, makers of VS1 and Evercomb, and a lot of other great products, too. Check out all the new stuff at their website, ConquestSense.com. More coming your way here on Wild Michigan.